Welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we have a legend. I'm actually excited about this show. I get excited about most of my shows because sometimes they're friends of mine. Today he's friend in my head. I feel like I've known him forever. We feel like we have all known him forever. None other than Mr. Damon John. How you feeling today? What's up?
I am amazing. I'm here with you, brother. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it. I'm sorry. This wasn't by choice. I was kind of gathering on my team, and we rented a space, and I'm like, I think, okay.
Yeah, I was like, all right. I mean, I'm not knocking it. I like her too. Is that Madonna, right?
I don't know if it's Marilyn. You know what? It's Madonna. You know what? I am dyslexic, but the room says the Madonna room.
Okay, so
there you go.
Well, she's changed a lot. I'll leave it at that. So my show is unique and say that we start each one of our episodes by having our guests walk us through the arc of their careers. So talk to us about the arc of your career, because people just think that you showed up on Shark Tank and you just wound up with FUBU. So talk to us about the arc of your career from FUBU to Shark Tank and what got you started in fashion and later inspired where you are today.
Ooh, all right. Let me try to make this quick. I need to do it within 2 minutes. Grew up in New York City. New emerging music coming out of the Bronx. This is the 50th anniversary of it. I call it our version of social media. We didn't know what was happening to other people like us or the kids. We didn't see it in the 6 o'clock news, what was going on in the streets of Kentucky or Compton, but through this music, the kids who did not have to sting or play an instrument anymore were communicating about their voices in the streets. And I loved it. It came with a way to walk, talk, and even dress. But my parents would get divorced when I was 10. I would never see or speak to my father ever again. But I love this music, only child. Right around 20 years old, I was so just fascinated by the music. I started to hear designer. We don't make things for African Americans. We don't make things for hip hop kids. We don't make things for whatever the case may be. It was taking our money and saying, we don't like you. 1989, Good Friday, the night before, I would make a couple of hats in my living room, stand on the corner, and I would sell $800 worth of hats, 1989, Good Friday, in 1 hour. I realized that my destiny was in my own hands, and I'm going to create my own company. I'm never going to work for anybody ever again the rest of my life. I worked for Red Lobster 5 years after that. Another story. But opened and closed FUBU 3 times from 89 to 92. I ran out of capital, ran out of cash. Found 3 friends of mine who said, let's all do this together. We're not going to let you fail. Had no money, but one or two, about 10 shirts in videos for 2 years, literally. And I would take them back, put them in the video, take them back, put them in the video. I kind of knew the rapper and their friends. By 1997, we were doing $400 million globally. I would build that company and run it and keep it still till today. Started to acquire other companies, Coogee, Drunken Monkey, Etonic Sneakers. Started to acquire a bunch of other companies to diversify my portfolio. 2007, nobody's buying any clothes and they can't pay their rent. I go on to a show, a stupid show that they said, come on the show, but I want to diversify my portfolio. I want to get pitched other things. Wait a minute. The show tells me I can't do any other show, but I was, wait, I got 3 girls I'm managing. They're opening up a clothing store in LA. I need to be on their cable show 3 separate times, 9 minutes apiece. Can't do any other show, but I was, sorry, Mr. Burnett, I have to pass. Get a call from a book agent, not even my agent. I heard you gave up a show on ABC for 3 girls named the Kardashians that nobody will ever hear of. 2 days later, Kardashians called me up. Damon, the producer, we don't think you hit our target audience. We don't want you on the show anymore. You're fired. 1 hour later, Mark Burnett calls up. So I heard you're available. Khloe Kardashian found out I was going to turn down the show because I was co-managing the girl. She fired me. She said, the world needs to know who I am. She'll never get in my way. 14 years later, I'm on this amazing show, realizing that it's the number one show on TV, watch parents and kids together. The number one show on TV, marketed to adults, watch kids 5 to 15. The number one show played in schools. And God is good. And I am here, and I get to invest in other people's dreams who are going to be bigger and better than Damon John ever will be. I hope there's a 12-year-old who's going to be bigger and better watching that show than I ever will be.
That's an interesting anecdote about Khloe. I don't think I ever knew that. But that is a very interesting anecdote, and that shows you that she is a visionary. I mean, that, and that's impressive. One of the things I wanted to talk about your connection with hip hop is, and I don't know if many people know this, but LL Cool J in a Gap commercial. I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this or not, but
of course I can.
Yeah, he LL Cool J was going into this Gap commercial, and he was able to freestyle in the Gap commercial. And in that Gap commercial, he rhymed "for us, by us," actually wearing FUBU, if anybody was paying attention. How did that happen? How did you build that relationship with LL? Did you ask him to do this? What's the backstory to that? And what did that commercial actually do for FUBU the brand?
I grew up in Hollis, Queens, and I don't know if there's something in the water of Hollis, Queens, but in this square 5 miles, there's LL Cool J, Salt and Pepper, Run DMC, Lost Boys, Tribe Called Quest, Ja Rule, Onyx, Intro, 50 Cent, some of the Fat Boys. And I grew up watching these men. And I was on tours. I was on the first Fresh Fest tour as a roadie pushing speakers. And you know who was on? We were 16 years old. It was me, another kid who said he was going to be good in music, another kid who said he's going to be good in videos, another one of our friends who said he was going to be a big drug dealer. Me, Hype Williams, Irv Gotti. The drug dealer did become a big drug dealer, and Hype made a movie called Belly about him, and he just got home after 30 years. I was on these road. I was just a roadie hanging out. We knew LL. We didn't know him that well. But when we started to do FUBU, he said he'd wear our clothes, and we kind of did a little deal with him. But this comes back to a bigger story. You know, when the Gap called him up, he felt somewhat insulted at the way the conversation went. They didn't care about who he was. They were like, yeah, LL, whoever your name is, hip-hop's growing. I'm white. My daughter's 16 years old and white. She's running around the house talking about fight the power and F the police. So I guess hip-hop's for everybody. Just come on and shoot the ad. He comes and he says, hey, I got a custom-made hat because I got a funny shape head. Remember, LL would never take his hat off at the time. He said, can I wear that? They said, can I wear that for the old school cats? They said, who knew that? He said, can I wear that? I said, yeah, whatever. Just come on in. He puts "For Us, By Us" on low in the video. There's no Indian. There's no social media. There's nobody to contact the Gap. The Gap spends 5 weeks airing this thing and $30 million. They found out they spent $30 million on a FUBU ad. They fire everybody from the Gap. But I got a bigger point here. They hired a multicultural agency, said, we need to clean all this crap up, do a spin on it. You know what they said?
What?
Hey, yo, I'm in the hood. You need to do your analytics. Cats are talking about going to the Gap to look for some FUBU. They do their analytics. The target market they were trying to hit increased 300% because kids thought they can get FUBU with the Gap. They called us up. We gave each other big old sloppy wet kiss, and they re-ran another $60 million worth of that ad. But the core to that is a couple of things. They didn't have anybody in their company that looked or thought like the people they served.
Correct. So they missed it.
They missed it. Now, they recovered in some sense, but that, listen, you know what? It's a big story. You know, everybody wants to say we need to correct what's going on in society because it's the right thing to do. Yeah, true, but it's the most profitable thing to do as well. You know, I don't know if a bunch of white males can make a good hair product for a black woman. I don't know if a bunch of black males can make a good product for an African-American woman. When you look like the people and think like the people you serve, you make more profit and more money.
So let me ask you this, leads into my next question. Some folks may not know you from FUBU. Some folks may only know you from Shark Tank. But I think the benefit of Shark Tank is that it gives you a somewhat realistic view into a pitch and what entrepreneurship looks like. And you see a lot of Black entrepreneurs on the show. Talk about how I mean the whole ecosystem of we, government, people who care about Black entrepreneurship. What can we do to support Black entrepreneurs?
Well, we need to, as entrepreneurs, think we need to know where does the problem arise from, because usually an entrepreneur comes with a problem and says, there's a problem that exists. It's keeping people up at night. I think somebody is going to solve it, but they don't. They're not solving it. I'm going to solve it. So what does government need to do? Well, there needs to be more funding, but there needs to be more. We'll get to a little Damon Learns to Earn, but there needs to be more education about finance and what money is, because our parents have not come normally from legacy wealth. We don't have a grandfather and grandmother to teach us legacy wealth. You know, only till the late 60s were we able to even get insurance other than burial insurance, and we weren't able to pass that down for generational wealth. So that's number one. If you understand the systemic, and we understand there's a lot of systemic things that have happened in the past. If you understand that, though, when you're an employer, here's how to solve the problem. Understand that no two felonies are alike. There may be somebody who's coming in and now they have to fill out this, but they sold a nickel bag of weed and got 10 years or 5 years in jail when somebody else got a slap on the wrist. And now they can actually open a cannabis store and this person can't. And to understand, to think about a little bit more further into that. Now, how do you do that? Do not go out and not be genuine, because you will have an African-American challenge today. Tomorrow will be LGBTQ. The next day, it'll be veterans. You do not want to not be genuine. The people in your company, though, many of them have had boots on the ground for many, many years and work in organizations. Your companies, your people first can tell you what they've been doing and give you authentic ways to educate yourself and help people. There's no one answer to it. I even have to be honest. You know, before the pandemic happened, I've given interns a lot of opportunity. I'm in the middle of Manhattan. I want to source from the best schools. I turned around when the pandemic happened. I realized, because most of my team has started intern, I turned around and realized I had 18 interns that didn't look like me and only two that looked like me, because I was sourcing for NYU and Columbia. Wait a minute. I'm becoming the thing I'm fighting against. Why am I not sourcing from Queens College? Because the brothers, they may not, they're way more brilliant people in a lot of different places. They may not have the opportunity. I have to be very intentional about systemic solutions.
What's next level success and why did you start it?
Well, first of all, another one thing we have to say is, Bakari, you know, I got to tell you something that is absolutely hideous in a sense. You know that I'm the only African-American man on a major network that didn't come from music, sports, or politics.
Wow.
You know that I've never been highlighted on African-American cover of an African-American magazine.
That's terrible.
I've sold more Inc. magazines than anybody in history. So where do we have to look at for that? Because there's a million men and women like me that should be highlighted. But, and don't get me wrong about the African-American magazine. I want to qualify that. If you're a music magazine, why am I on there? If you're a sports magazine, why am I on there? But as people who want to correct this change, I want to highlight the Bakaris of the world. Well, then if you know that Mary J. Blige is going to sell magazines, ask Mary to put behind her the two and three people from her crew, the most efficient business people, whether it's her lawyer, her manager, maybe they'll put them on the inside cover. Now you can make more money, but Mary will only do it if that people did. If LeBron puts Maverick, if everybody puts those other people on inside and everything, well, now the kids get to see too, because you know what? I can't dunk a basketball, but there's 10 other careers around that player that I want to look like and I want to be. So that's something that we need to just be vocal about with our amazing talent and leaders, because taking nothing away from the actors and athletes, they are extraordinary, and they have beaten way bigger odds. But what you said, something else about success. So what's my whatever you said, something in success, and I want to go there with what you asked.
Next level success.
Next level, you mean where I'm going next? What would be my next? I'm on my three-peat, man. I didn't even tell you to ask me that question. So number one, I create a brand that's globally recognized that shows people they can empower themselves. That's cool. I then got onto a show, not realizing it was going to be a show that again and showed everybody that no matter what, you bust your ass and you stand on that carpet, you're ready to get up before everybody and go to bed after everybody. And if Damon's dyslexic, got left back butt can make it, I can make it. That was my second success. My third is this new journey I'm going down, and I'm starting it with a book. It's not about the book, it's about connecting with my little girl, but it's about breaking the system in this country of not teaching our kids financial intelligence at early age of 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, first grade, first, second, third, fourth, fifth. And I did it by coming out with a book called Little Damon Learns to Earn. Right here it goes right here. There's no book out there like this. There's no book that I could read to my little girl of 5 and 6 that shows her the concept of what starting a business is and relying on others like her friends and the gifts that they have and coming together as a group to do something she loves. So anything she can consume, she can sell, and to give her the process of understanding slowly so that when she, if she decides to go to college, she understands. You see, where we're at right now is they teach our kids, this, and this is not, and by the way, this is not a conspiracy, the lack of financial intelligence in our schools. We are living off the old system where we were taught how to become a good employee or go to shop because we were in world wars and we needed to be industrial. But so they don't teach us that. But then at 16, 17 years old, you can acquire $700,000 worth of student debt and you won't pay up till you're 50 years old for an education you're not even sure you want to have. By the way, you can go and get finance, right? You can get accounting. But I just took a $700,000 loan and now you're teaching me finance? Mm-hmm. So that's like putting somebody in the Navy saying, get on the ship and we'll teach you how to swim once you're at war in the middle of the ocean. And so this is my journey because I invite anybody and everybody to highlight on my platform any kind of financial intelligence or anything you want that the teachers could put in a soluble system where I want to start seeing schools in whether Atlanta, Detroit, or Chicago go, we are seeing better performance. Why aren't you doing it in Texas? Why aren't you doing it in California? I want to make this the in thing because once I crack this, it's going to go. And this is what I want to go to the grave with. I want my little girl to say, my father was the one who changed the cycle in this country and got people to realize that we need to do this at an earlier age for our children because he was in their living room like Mr. Rogers because now our kids don't have any national heroes. They only have thousands of family on YouTube showing kids how to unbox a toy instead of create what's in the box.
The reason you're here, of course, is little Damon learns to earn, excuse me.
Man, I got to get that book to you. You got four-year-old twins?
Yeah. Four-year-old twins. There you go. Last question for you. Every book changes the author. Talk about how your children's book has affected you and the impact you've seen. And how did writing Little Damon Learns to Earn change you?
It changed my life. You know, I have a 29-year-old and a 24-year-old daughters. I thought I taught them financial intelligence, but they don't have it. My way of doing that was, hey, baby, you wanna buy a car? Well, you know, you make half it. I'll match it. You know what I taught her? I taught her how to work hard. Now I have a 5-year-old, 6-year-old. I wouldn't have related to this unless my little girl. You know, I need to start processing information now. If this business fails that I have right here, I don't know if I'm going to do it next year. I'm never going to stop giving my little baby what I want her to learn when she's 6, when she's 7, when she's 8, she's 9. I started to connect with her. And I'm just sharing with all the other parents on how to connect because I don't want my – you have boys or girls?
One boy, one girl.
All right. I don't want my daughter thinking that she's going to have – I read too many Princess Pony books. I don't want my daughter thinking that she needs to wait for some prince to find her her slipper or throw down your hair. I don't want her doing that. I don't want your little boy to think that he's going to have webs coming out of his wrist or flying. I want your little boy to be the Avengers and say, no. I know the Avengers get together to fight evil. No, my Avengers is you can sing, you can dance, I can do this. And you know what? Let's get together and have fun and bring joy to people. You know what? We may make some gummy bears off of that. So this book has changed my life, man. And I wear the hat. You know why I wear the hat? Because we all want to be kids. And you know what? Your little son and daughter, and 2-3 years old, they see me wearing this hat. They don't care. They don't care when I'm on Shark Tank like this in a $10,000 Tom Ford suit. When I wear this, I'm going to teach them some magic. And if I'm going to have it, you think I, by the way, all the parents who think I look stupid here, remember when you liked Willy Wonka? Remember when liked the Snowman? Nah, don't play yourself. You don't look don't play yourself.
You know what you look like? You like a dad. You like a dad who cares about his child.
And if I'm going to wear this hat, I'm going to wear this for your kids, my kids, and you think I like to do it, that's your problem. I'm going to do anything for our children. This is my life goal, man.
Man, we're going to end on that note. None other than Mr. Damon John, who has come on the Bakari Sellers podcast. I've admired you for a long time, and this has been enriching. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, and thank you for what you do. I am a fan. Thank you.